This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Indiana's freshman senator Mike Braun recently teamed up with Delaware Senator Chris Coons, a Democrat, to launch the Senate Climate Solutions Caucus, a bipartisan effort against climate change. More recently, the chairman of the Indiana Federation of College Republicans, Isaiah Mears, co-founded Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends, which will urge Republican lawmakers to pass a carbon tax, which they say will create economic incentives to develop cleaner technologies. Isaiah joins us now. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Jesse Carbonda, executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council. Thank you to you as well.
Great to be with you, Matt.
And we welcome your questions or comments on our live show today. Is it time for Republicans to come to the table on climate change, or do the economic consequences outweigh the political potential benefits, rather? Let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Just give your name, where you're calling from, and a quick question or comment, and we'll do our best to get it into the conversation. Again, that's 866-476-3881. Isaiah, I want to get to the genesis of your advocacy. How long have you been concerned about climate change?
Yeah, so I'd say about last summer, I found myself in Republican young conservative circles talking about all the issues. And I also found myself with my peers, you know, people that aren't necessarily conservatives, and they're talking about climate change. And I found myself not being able to develop the language or use the language in a conservative way to talk about climate change. And so, I mean, it's an issue that as we're growing up, we're not really in tune with. You know, it's not something that conservatives like to talk about or even think about talking about. So that's where I found myself last summer. I was approached by a colleague of mine out in D.C., and he's like, hey, let's have a conversation. I want to talk about young conservatives or carbon dividends. And then from there, I was like, yeah, I think this is a great conservative solution to tackling climate change. This is something that I can get behind.
Where were you before that? Were you among the traditional Republican fray on the issue?
I'd say, you know, coming in as a wide-eyed freshman in college, you know, I probably took more of the traditional stance on it. You know, wasn't really thinking about it. Wasn't something that was at the top of my mind all the time. But, you know, I can even think of another instance. So this past fall, I actually was in Athens, Greece for the New York Times Athens Democracy Forum. And it was basically just a week-long event talking about how do we restore faith and democracy, and then also kind of the inequalities with climate change and things like that. And I found myself in a room with 20 other of my peers from around the world talking about climate change, and I had no idea what to say. And, you know, I didn't want to come across dumb. I didn't want to come across as ignorant, you know, so I just kind of sat there and I listened. And through that instance, I just realized, you know, this is something that the rest of the world is ahead of the United States on. And it's something that I think as a young conservative that I can join and try and tackle this issue and come up with a conservative solution.
Why do you think that is, that the rest of the world is ahead of us on this sort of a thing?
You know, I think it's just starting out, you know, the grassroots approach to it, you know, in the family, in your household, you know, this is just isn't an issue that you talk about as a conservative, you know. So I think I took that upon myself to we need to start this conversation. We need to be having this discussion. You know, we need to get over the initial hurdle of the trigger word of climate change, you know, and just say like, yeah, this is something that we need to understand. And, you know, if we don't start coming up with a solution of our own, we're going to get stuck with something we don't like. So
like the Green New Deal,
exactly.
You say.
Yep.
Yeah. You say that that takes things too far.
I do. I think that the best approach to it is, you know, we should be pushing out a single policy approach. You know, we should be working with businesses, not against them. Whereas the Green New Deal, you know, it's a blanket, a bunch of different regulations, you know, and I just think that we should be unleashing the powers of our market instead of trying to regulate and have much more government in it. So,
Jesse, when the Green New Deal started making news, and of course it didn't get particularly far, but in the Democratic dominated House, I mean, it definitely got some attention. When you saw some of the things that they were proposing, what did you, I guess, like about it?
Well, I think, you know, when we think about the Green New Deal, we need to think about it in terms of content rather than the messengers behind it. And much of the bulk of the content of the Green New Deal is focused on a recitation of scientific facts about how climate change is going to impact the U.S. economy, U.S. infrastructure, and so forth. So I think that element of it is something that ought to bring together people across the political spectrum. Given that those scientific facts are the result of efforts by U.S. climate scientists. And I think the other notion about the Green New Deal is to really relay just how much we need to decarbonize every aspect of the U.S. economy. Now, our organization supports the Energy Innovation Act, which is H.R. 763, this federal policy to create a cap and dividend model, which I think really puts us in alignment with some of the conservative groups that are emerging as a policy that would be levied at the source of emissions and really affect about 1,200 different emitters and then reverberate into the economy. We think this is a really smart, technology-neutral way to significantly cut in carbon in the U.S. economy.
Isaiah, do you see this as more of a first step, or do you think that this will get us where we need to go?
You know, one thing I don't think that we're thinking about, though, is, you know, this isn't something that's new, right? Conservatives, Republicans have been championing climate change for a long time now. I mean, you look at Richard Nixon, you know, you look at how President
Bush
created
the EPA.
Right, exactly.
H.W. Bush tackled acid rain.
Exactly. And with a similar format, too, right? You know, you're putting a certain tax or whatnot on the pollution that you're trying to get rid of. So, I mean, it's a similar structure. You know, I think that this could definitely get us where we want to be, you know, cutting emissions by 2035. You know, I think this is the most conservative way to go about it. But I think it's also twofold. I think this will also begin to have those discussions and those conversations that I think are needed within conservative circles to be able to develop the language and, you know, I think even defend ourselves really in climate change, because right now it's a pretty one-sided battle. So
go ahead, Jesse.
Well, I was just going to say, Matt, that, you know, I think that there is this ongoing fear about how climate public policy is going to impact Indiana. But the beauty is that because Indiana has the most industrial dependent state in the country, we actually stand to benefit economically disproportionate to the size and population of Indiana. I mean, we've already have nearly 90,000 jobs in clean energy, and there are more jobs in solar energy in Indiana than there are in coal mining. And so I think wherever we lie on the political spectrum, really have to be talking about the economic opportunity this is, that the next generation of jobs for Hoosiers is going to be in the field of clean energy, clean transportation, sustainable agriculture.
Isaiah, I'm sure Jesse, you'll chime in on this as well. I'm curious to know what you think of House Bill, was it 1414, which has also been, it's been called all kinds of things, but I think coal bailout bill is probably mm-hmm. the most triggering for people. When you've looked into that, what have you thought? Have you thought that that's, I don't know, how have you felt about that?
You know, I really don't even think that's the conversation, if I'm being completely honest with you. You know, I don't see people getting excited about that. Mm. You know, I think it's the traditional, you know, business as usual norm kind of thing that a conservative policy would be. You know, I see people excited about climate change, excited in conservative circles like, yeah, I think we're doing something great. I think we're having a great discussion. I think we're coming up with great solutions. So, I mean, sure, that did get passed, but I really don't think that that's the conversation. I don't see people reaching out and saying, hey, can you come join our radio show? Or, hey, I think you see people excited about, you know, there's young conservatives out there that are trying to push a movement. And it's starting here in Indiana. You know, you can even see it with our very own Senator Mike Braun, you know, the Climate Solutions Caucus. And, you know, he's tipping the scales in the right direction. And we're just kind of following his lead. And we want to present him with solutions as well. So,
and we did reach out to Mike Braun's people to see if maybe he could be part of the conversation today. But we were not, we did not hear back. Jesse.
Well, Matt. And I was going to say that HB 1414 is perhaps the most – is actually not perhaps. It is the most contentious bill in the realm of energy and the environment going on in the Indiana General Assembly right now. And it is anticipated to have a hearing in the Senate Utilities Committee probably next week. The heart of the bill is that it would create an unnecessary roadblock in the transition from coal to clean energy. We've seen a number of coal plants retire largely because they've hit the end of their lifespan, around 50 years. And the best and wisest thing to do is to continue to let that transition happen. There's worry that somehow if we move from clean coal to non-coal sources, quickly that somehow it will destabilize the electricity grid. But right now, we're only getting about 6% of our electricity from renewable energy. So there's no worry about reliability. And why we can say that is because you've got states like Iowa, Nebraska, and North Dakota, and Oklahoma that all have renewable energy and more than 30% of their portfolio. And they have A, just as good reliability, and B, lower electricity costs in Indiana.
Mm. Isaiah, I want to talk about Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends. So this got going, when was it, this past fall?
Yeah, so that's when we had our campaign launch, yep.
And so the idea behind this is what?
The idea behind this is, you know, to come up with a conservative solution to climate change, you know, to be a young conservative and try and take initiative and lead on this issue. And we think that the carbon dividend solution is something that can do just that. You know, we have about 23, 24 other state chairmen like myself from across the country. And, you know, we're trying to come up with solutions and have good conversations. And it's also not just across the country, too. I mean, we're doing things here in Indiana as well. Actually, this past couple of weeks, we drafted a letter and sent it to the entire Indiana delegation. It was signed by 10 other colleges here in Indiana. And it's basically just urging policymakers, you know, this is an issue that we think is important. It's an issue that we think you think should be important. And, you know, we should be doing things to help it out.
So you were talking about essentially a progressive tax on carbon emissions that would incentivize less pollution, mm-hmm. essentially, and that would then, as you say, drive the market toward cleaner solutions.
Exactly. So, you know, you're forcing businesses to innovate, right? You know, you're trying to get rid of the pollution while also helping them navigate and pivot towards other uses of energy. And we think that it's an excellent solution.
And you say that without this, though, because some conservatives have said the free market approach is just let the market do what it will and innovation will come out. But what you're saying is that it needs incentive.
Yeah.
It needs incentive to push it along.
I do. I think it needs incentive because, you know, we don't want to talk about the issue. Mm. We don't want to think that it exists, you know, and if we continue along that line of thinking, we're going to end up with a Green New Deal. So, you know, we need to incentivize our businesses. We need to be working with our businesses. We need to be following the lead of Senator Braun in order to do these things.
Isaiah Mears is the chairman of the Indiana Federation of Young Republicans, College Republicans, and co-founder of Young Conservatives for Climate Dividends. Jesse Carbonda is executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council. They'll both be sticking around for the rest of the hour. And up next, we'll hear from Andy Downs of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics. And we will also welcome Mike Oakes, the Republican mayor of North Vernon, Indiana, whose clean energy initiative was inspired by what their local library had done a few years ago. And again, we welcome your questions and comments on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana or at 866-476-3881. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about Republicans who have bucked the traditional party stance on addressing climate change or the perception thereof. If you have a question or comment for the conversation today, you can find us on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. And before we get back to our panel, I wanted to get some analysis on what we typically hear from Republicans on issues relating to climate change and environmental policies. So here is a conversation that I had yesterday with Andy Downs from the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics. Andy Downs, we're talking today about Indiana Republicans who support action on climate change. And we reached out to four lawmakers from the Indiana General Assembly in an attempt to get the traditional Republican perspective on these issues, none of whom were able to make it. We are in session, after all. So we called you to illustrate some of it for us. You're the director of the nonpartisan Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics at IPFW. So I want to make it clear that you're not here to represent one side over the other, but can you give us a general idea of where Indiana Republicans have traditionally fallen on this issue?
Sure. The state of Indiana is often described as a conservative state, even when you look at the majority of Democrats within the state. There are some pockets and obviously some individuals who might get labeled as progressive and very liberal. But even, especially down in the South, historically, even the Democrats are viewed as relatively conservative. As far as the Republican Party is concerned, they have been very much the party that says the Constitution, both the U.S. and Indiana Constitution, are vitally important, and that they are there to help protect you and me so that we can live our life and enjoy life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They also say that what we're really here to enjoy in terms of our individual freedoms also includes market-based economics and the idea that we are able to engage in transaction and commerce in the least encumbered way possible.
So that's the sort of pragmatic explanation for why they have traditionally fallen where they've fallen. But what are some more of those arguments, sort of, I guess, against action on climate change or clean energy or things like that?
For a lot of folks, the way to look at where the Indiana Republican Party stands is to actually look at their own platform from 2018. And in that, they do make reference to the importance of the environment and making sure that we leave a clean, wonderful, sustainable place. But then they temper that by saying that has to be balanced out with the goals, the economic goals of the political party. And the question becomes, whenever you're balancing things out, are the scales tipped a little more in one direction or the other? And even if you think about, say, a Governor Daniels, for example, who said, and I'm going to get the quote a little bit wrong, but it was something along the lines of, a poor Indiana will never be a green Indiana. And what he meant by that was, if we don't have good paying jobs, what we will have are industries that basically try to exploit the environment for very cheap gains and short-term gains. But if you are a vibrant economy, you have, some would call it the luxury of investing in long-term investments like forests and environmental remediation and things that make for a cleaner place for all.
So in other words, we need to take care of ourselves before we think about taking care of the environment.
And I think there are a lot of people who would say that's a perfectly logical thing to do, especially in the Republican Party. If you and I are not comfortable, what does a clean environment mean or bring to the table, so to speak? But if we go further back, you think about folks like Teddy Roosevelt and others who were very much at the forefront of preservation and conservation of the environment. It is not outside the norm for there to be Republicans who are very much pro-environment. It's just tempered by economic needs of those of us living in the environment.
Part of the reason that we did this show today have been comments from Senator Mike Braun that have gotten a lot of attention. And I do think it's surprising that those comments have gotten attention, but I think it's illustrative, I guess, of the Republican Party's sort of hard line against action on climate change and clean energy and things like that. He, of course, has said, has spoken out in support of the party coming to the table with things like this. And he has worked with Democratic senators in recent weeks and months to address this. Has that come as a surprise to you?
For some people, it is. If you look nationally, Republicans, in terms of folks who say that, for example, the federal government's not doing enough regarding climate change, it's not even 40% or approximately 40% of Republicans who agree with that statement, whereas it's like 90% with Democrats. So there is clearly a partisan division here. And anytime a Republican steps up and says that, it looks like they're not in alignment with the rest of their particular party. But we come back to, for example, what the platform of the Indiana Republican Party was in 2018, and that was about conservation. It was about having a clean environment, but balanced against the economic interests or needs of the state.
Do Democrats meet that sort of talk with skepticism?
They certainly do, in part because of the way the national Republican, if you look at, once again, looking at the polling data, the nationally Republicans are far more skeptical about the concepts like climate change and human involvement in that. And so whenever a Republican says something that is counter to that, a lot of Democrats are going to be suspicious. That's part of the environment we're in. And they're going to say, well, what's the angle that you're working here that actually, you know, gets you where you want to be as opposed to where we think we should go? In other words, how are you going to soften our attempts at pro-environmental regulation and legislation?
One of our guests today, Isaiah Mears, is co-founder of a nationwide campaign called Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends. It's advocating for a carbon tax to curb climate change. It's sort of the conservative, the young conservatives' response to, say, the Green New Deal, which they say would take things a little too far. I guess, is this less now of a right versus left issue and more of a younger versus older issue?
There certainly is an age factor here. Once again, looking at the polling data, and for those who want to read more, Pew Research has done some research on this very issue. And what they find is that basically the older you get, so if you look at boomers and olders and then Generation X and then millennials and Generation Z, what you see is a gradual increase among them for believing that the government is doing too little to actually deal with the effects of climate change. And by the time you get to millennials and younger folks, it's actually a slim majority who say the government is not doing enough. But if you look at baby boomers and olders, it's not even quite a third. So there's clearly an age element here, but I do want to point out that when you read that sort of description or purpose of an organization like you just did, that in some respects lines up quite nicely with what the Indiana Republican Party put in its own platform, and it lines up to some degree with what Senator Braun has said.
So right now, we have House Bill 1414 moving through the legislature. Some have called it the coal bailout bill, and it could slow the transition from coal to cleaner energy sources in Indiana. But just that recognition that there is a transition happening is – it's kind of a curious one. Have pro-coal politicians more or less accepted that coal is on its way out?
I think there is an awful lot of evidence in terms of the economy, in terms of political figures who've had the national stage, as well as other community leaders. Coal is recognized as probably not the energy of the future, or some would say definitely not the energy of the future. And then the question becomes, well, how long will it be around and how do we manage the transition? And that's the language that you hear whenever a bill like this comes up is, this is about transition. How do we make sure that the transition works out? We can't immediately jump to a bunch of green sources. We've got to gradually get there. And that's the way bills like this are often described. So I think it's safe to say that there's a general perception that the coal industry is on its way out. The question is how long till it is a small, small fraction of energy production.
So Republicans are the dominant party in Indiana. They're kind of used to getting a good bit of what they want in the General Assembly. How does that contrast with Democrats? I guess I'm thinking of last fall when Senate Democrats unveiled their agenda for the session, and their top priorities were marijuana decriminalization, gun safety measures, these sort of ideological counters to the Republican supermajority. They proposed these things, I would imagine, knowing full well that it wouldn't get anywhere. I guess what I'm asking is, what is the difference between being in power and not being in power when it comes to proposing legislation?
There's an old saying that we campaign in poetry and we govern in prose. And what that's getting at is this idea that when you're running for office, you can use flowery language. But when you're actually in government, you have to get things done. And that becomes much more pragmatic. The language is not quite as pretty. I think the same maybe could be said about those who are in the minority versus majority. When you're in the minority, you can take that ideological stance, as you called it. You can say things that appear to be, some would say, more ideologically pure because you know you have less of a chance of actually getting things done. However, your goal still is to get things done. So you want to negotiate with people on the other side. But when you're in a super minority, as we see here in Indiana, the likelihood of moving things too far beyond where the majority party or supermajority party wants to go is kind of small. So why not make the grand statement as opposed to the very modified statement that gets you a slightly less, some might call, offensive policy as opposed to taking the grand stance and just vilifying the policy you don't like.
Andy Downs is the director of the Mike Downs Center for Indiana Politics. Andy, thanks for your time.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And we're back now with Jesse Carbonda, executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, as well as Isaiah Mears, chairman of the Indiana Federation of College Republicans. And we're also welcoming the Republican mayor of North Vernon, Indiana, Mike Oaks. Mike, thanks for making the drive up to Indy.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Mike, I want to get to what your city, North Vernon, did in just a few minutes, but I want to get Isaiah's response to some of what Andy Downs just talked about. Isaiah, I guess, is it fair to assume that some may be surprised to hear that there are Republicans who want to tackle climate change?
Sure. Sure, that could be surprising. But I think that it's low-hanging fruit for Republicans. I really do. I think that this is an issue that we can tackle. I think this is an issue that we can come up with a solution for, and I think it's something that we can win on. There's a lot of young conservatives right now that won't even take a look at candidates solely because they don't have this issue on their platform or in their arsenal. And I think it's a moment for GOP leadership, and it's some low-hanging fruit for us right now.
Would you call it a movement, or are there not quite enough on the Republican side to call it a movement toward, well, what you're proposing, carbon dividends?
I definitely think it's a movement. You know, we see Senator Braun starting the Climate Solutions Caucus. He's already recruited another five senators to join with him. We see Kevin McCarthy on the other side, who says he thinks we're at risk of losing an entire generation of young voters if we don't start talking about this issue. So I think it is a movement. I think we're seeing some GOP leadership, and we're seeing us push the scales the right way.
Okay, Mike, you're the mayor of North Vernon, Indiana, which is sort of branding itself in a new way after you made some changes in how the city gets its energy. What did you do?
Well, first off, they had a meeting, when I say they, the airport had a consultant come down and talk to them about going solar for their airport. And this company came down, it's called Johnson Mello, came down and talked to them about this. And I sat in on the meeting. And when I heard this discussion and saw the results of what could be done, I said, before you do this project, I'd come and talk to my city council. This sounds too good to be true. If you can really do what you're saying, I said, I want this presented to the city council.
What was he saying?
He was telling them how much money they could save by going solar, by having solar panels reduce the cost of the electricity. Mm. And I said, what he presented was almost like too good to be true. So he came and he presented it to our city council. Now this is pretty good because I have two electricians on my city council. And after he presented the project to the council, they went for it right away. The first things we did is we went all LED lights throughout the city, street lights, all the lights in the building, and all the lights in all the buildings that the city owns. And then he went ahead and started putting panels various places. We have some green space. Where we didn't have green space, he put it on the roofs. Now, our library, 4 years prior, had gone total solar. And so before we did anything, we went out and looked at their project and see what they had done. And immediately I was sold. Immediately I talked it up and they became sold. It saves the energy, it saves the emissions, it saves a whole lot of things, it saves electricity, it saves us money. And so the project that we did, I could see it saving taxes for the people of our city.
And Jesse Carbonda, the Hoosier Environmental Council, presented Mayor Oaks with an award for this. What was that?
Right. It was our Climate Advocate of the Year award, and as well as our Elected Official Year award. Yeah. So, you know, Mayor Oaks is really exemplifies the fact that several cities in the state are stepping up when there is this federal paralysis at the national level. You know, and in addition to that, one of the themes that we have at Hoosier Environmental Council is to really spotlight the fact that there are climate solutions that can be advanced to the Indiana General Assembly. We've talked about one being HB 1414 is something that would set us back on that journey of decarbonizing our state. But then there are things like SB 369, which has to do with expanding the opportunity for mass transit across the state, and SB 229, which would be a setback in terms of weakening protections for wetlands, which are critical to helping to get the state to better adapt to increased flooding that is predicted by the Purdue Climate Change Research Center.
So, Mayor Oakes, where are the panels? Where are the panels? You put them on municipal buildings?
Yes. Some are on the roof. Some are on the ground. And there are various places. Some the ones that's on the roof, you can't hardly tell they're there. I mean, they blend into the to the roof line. They and don't stick up.
What's the savings like?
Right now, we're just going through our first year.
So there's some initial costs for equipment and things like that.
The first cost is substantial, and what we do, we set it up, we financed it. We took out a loan. We didn't have to go get a bond, and we took it out for 16 years, and with the first payment not due till 18 months, and we got it financed at a real low rate of interest. And again, we didn't this by doing this, we didn't have to raise taxes. Nothing like that at all, and after that we started doing that, we just started. We're saving the first bunch of money that we normally put out in electricity payments, saving that to make our first initial payment.
Very quickly, any complaints whatsoever?
None at all.
None. Plenty more to cover today as we talk about the Republican Party's relationship with environmental issues. My guests today are Isaiah Mears, co-founder of Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends, Jesse Carbonda, executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, and Mike Oakes, the mayor of Solar City, North Vernon, Indiana. And we want to hear from you. Send your questions or comments to our social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, and we'll get to some of those next. Or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on Indiana Republicans who want to tackle climate change, a discussion spurred by the initiation of a Senate Climate Solutions Caucus by Indiana Senator Mike Braun and Delaware Democrat Chris Coons, as well as the action of my guest Isaiah Mears. He's the chairman of the Indiana Federation of College Republicans and co-founder of Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends. We also have Mayor Mike Oakes from North Vernon, Indiana, which installed solar panels on many of the city's municipal buildings, and executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council, Jesse Carbonda. Thanks again to all of you for sticking around. And as always, we would love to hear your questions and comments. What do you think about the big government moves that have been proposed, like the Green New Deal? Are they necessary, or would it be too much too quickly? Or would a carbon tax like the one Isaiah's group is proposing be more fiscally responsible? Find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave a short voicemail at 866-476-3881. Let's get to some of those listener comments now. Greg from Facebook writes, HR 763 was mentioned as something that Republicans could support. There are currently 80 co-sponsors, but only one Republican. What could be done to get more Republicans to sign on? Are we talking about the initiative here, Jesse, that Mike Aylesworth signed on to?
Well, HR 760, it was HR 763, is that what was said?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the one of the principal federal policy solutions.
Federal policy.
That's right. That's right. And it's called the Energy Innovation Act. And the ultimate outcome is that there would be a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions by 40% by 2030. And, you know, it was introduced in a bipartisan way. And, you know, one of the points that I want to make is that we shouldn't box either the carbon tax notion or Green New Deal in these categories, particularly in this climate when there is so much polarization at the congressional level. There's actually common ground that one can find on both realms. You know, the Citizens Climate Lobby, which has been a major force in trying to push for a carbon tax in the country, they have this disciplined approach that anytime they bring in a Democratic sponsor in support of it, there has to be a Republican sponsor in support of that bill. So it's emphatically bipartisan. And even the Green New Deal, which I know a lot of conservatives aren't particularly good fans of, I think, again, we have to look at the content, and we have to look at the fact that, for example, one of the observations that's made in the resolution is that climate change is going to disproportionately impact minority communities and poor communities. And that ought to be something that, as Republicans get increasingly sensitized to issues like criminal justice reform, ought to be something for which there is this empathy, that there is this common ground between the right and the left. And we need to have that in order to actually get this type of comprehensive solution like a carbon tax through the Congress.
Isaiah, I'm curious what you think as a young Republican, what you have thought, I guess, of big news items like, say, President Trump's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement. Do you think that was the right move on from him?
I do. I think that it forced America to kind of, you know, jump into something that we weren't necessarily ready for yet, and the rest of the world just got to sit on the sideline and see how we reacted to it and how we would play out. So I think that it was unfair originally. But I do think that we saw some backlash with that. You know, I think the rest of the world pointed the finger at us and said, you don't care about climate change, you don't care about the rest of the world. But I think that that's completely not true. I think that, you know, we're seeing young conservatives and conservatives in general starting this conversation. So,
am I recalling correctly, though, that you said that young conservatives for carbon dividends, what you're proposing would essentially go even further than what we would have been required to do under the Green New Deal as far as how we would mitigate our carbon emissions?
In terms of
meaning, if we tax carbon, we'll actually emit eventually less carbon than the Paris Agreement would have required.
Right. Exactly. You know, we're forcing businesses to innovate. We're working with our economy, not against it. We're not regulating it. We're not having massive government regulations on board. And we're letting our market work itself out while incentivizing it to do so.
I thought it was very disturbing that we withdrew. We only became the first country in the entire world to withdraw from Paris Climate Agreement. There were no enforceability elements to the agreement. It in some ways was about our country joining forces across the globe in addressing the greatest problem facing humanity. And in some ways, it was a symbolic thing. And it was something that I think unfortunately reflected an abdication of U.S. leadership when we have been so able in trying to address great ills of facing humanity, like fighting Nazism and fighting communism. And it was an unfortunate abdication of leadership. The unintended but positive consequence of that withdrawal is that you do have more innovation happening at different levels, as exemplified by Mayor Oakes.
Mayor Oakes, I want to get back to you because as Isaiah said earlier in the show, climate change is kind of a trigger word for Republicans. Have you gotten any pushback from anyone who says that the move to install all of this solar equipment in North Vernon was a bad idea economically?
Economically, no. Some people said, what are those things? They look ugly. And it's just the concept of a lot of people, just people in general, don't like change. They see this and they don't understand what it is until they see the savings. I'm sure Edison, when he started putting up poles and lines, what is that thing? Oh, that's ugly. But now look where we are today.
Yeah.
It's the concept of, what's it look like? And what's it do? Oh, that's ugly. Until they see the results, the results are quite a savings. That's the bottom line. And when you start to get your electric bill, and the only charge is just for the meter, that's a good thing.
We have a listener voicemail who they have a comment about the economics of climate change. Let's listen to that now.
Hi, my name is Larry, and I'm from Northwest Indiana. And I just wanted to say it's not a choice between the economy and the environment. That's proven out by two examples, one in Europe and one in the United States. The largest economy in the United States is California, which has stricter environmental regulations than the rest of the country. And in Europe, it's Germany with the same exact situation. Also, 1414, that House bill, let them pass the worst version of that. Don't try to doctor it up and amend it to make it acceptable. It's ridiculous. Coal plants are closing because of economics, not because of politics. And it's going to happen no matter what. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry, for that voicemail. I hear that, and then I think about the ins and outs of 1414. And again, we don't have to spend too much time on it, but from the complaints that I've heard about 1414 is that it's getting in the way of the economics. Jesse?
That's right. You know, it's very ironic that some of the champions of the bill have touted free market principles for decades, for most of their political career. And now what they're effectively doing is forcing the Utility Regulatory Commission to get involved in the decision making that has been, you know, that privately owned utilities have had the discretion over for years. So it's very ironic that this is happening. We shouldn't be afraid of this transition. We are at 6% renewable energy, going towards natural gas, which will partly be adopted by some utilities, and then towards renewable energy. We will not sacrifice reliability. We will certainly have lower electricity bills. NIPS go up in Northwest Indiana, where your caller Larry is from. They are projecting that they will save $4 billion over a 20-year period as they transition from coal to renewables and storage.
Isaiah, when I hear something like that, I also think of the other problems that we have in the environment that some argue that government could get ahead of. What are some other creative solutions that have been proposed in your circles to address other things in addition to climate change?
And to regulate emissions or
– things like that, yeah. Or have there been other additional ideas to address carbon emissions and get ahead of climate change in addition to carbon taxes?
Yeah. I think we can point towards Mayor Oaks and also Jesse as well. I'm a senior at Wabash College, so I live in Crawfordsville. In Crawfordsville, Montgomery County just had a big push last year to potentially install wind energy, solar, and things of that nature into the county. And there was a big debate on what that looks like for us. What's that going to impact us with taxes and things like that? But the incentives of it and the amount of jobs and the amount of money that could have been saved, I think, outweighed those things. And so I think those are some other avenues that we could be exploring. Unfortunately, Montgomery County did not go ahead with that. But I think that we can point towards people like Mayor Oaks. You know, it's something that can happen. It's something that can benefit society. And, you know, it doesn't always have to raise taxes in the meantime.
Small town solutions can make a big difference.
Exactly.
We have another listener voicemail, this one from Russ in Yorktown. He has a suggestion about where new jobs should be placed in the state.
Hi, this is Russ Vernon from Yorktown, Indiana, and a suggestion I have is that because jobs are a concern in southwestern Indiana with coal miners, why don't we give incentives for manufacturers to locate that manufacture green energy equipment? Thank you. Bye-bye.
Is that a solution, Jesse?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, I'm thinking about actually one of the things that we've expressly said when the press has asked us for comment on 1414 is let's have a completely different and undertaking to address the core of the issue, which is that there are going to be displaced coal miners as we transition. And let's have the Indiana Economic Development Corporation make a concerted effort to draw jobs into Southwest Indiana where there is change coming, which will bear the biggest burden of this transition to clean energy resources. Let's have increased state government appropriations towards retraining coal miners. That approach, more retraining dollars, more concerted effort to drawing in investment into Southwest Indiana is the much more constructive and productive way to deal with the underlying rationale of 1414.
Isaiah, I want to come back to this, to something you said earlier in the show about climate change being a trigger word for Republicans. In your circles, how has that been overcome? Has it just been pragmatic thinking about the issue at hand, or has it just been a sort of evolution of the conversation?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. We've had some pushback.
Yeah.
We've been in circles. We've had conversations. We've had our convention, the College Republicans National Convention, and we've had a lot of pushback. But, you know, I think that we are tipping the scales the right way. We're leading by example. We're starting these conversations. You know, it's something that the rest of our country just isn't really talking about, and we think that it's important that we need to start doing that.
We have a listener voicemail from Michael in Indianapolis about how to define a conservative solution on this issue. Let's listen now.
Hi, this is Michael calling from Indianapolis, and I'd like a definition cleared up for me. What's the difference between a conservative solution to climate change and an appropriate solution to climate change?
Conservative versus appropriate. That sounds like that comment or question might be a little weighted. But Isaiah, do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I think that it's kind of what we've been saying before, which is why we think that our policy solution is the correct one. We should be working with our market. We should be working with our businesses and not against them. And I think that's where the conservative piece comes into play. When you think about the other side, it's a lot more broadly placed brush of let's have 10 different policies. We think that we should just have one single one that promotes our market, that promotes our businesses, that helps them pivot and innovate. And I think that that's what I would define as a more conservative solution.
Mayor Oakes, you're the mayor of North Vernon. I guess local politics are very, very different from state politics and national politics. But where, I guess, have you stood on this issue in the past? How have your thoughts, I guess, evolved over the time?
Being a scout, you know, loving the outdoors, loving that type of thing, and finally getting into being a mayor, being able to make some choices and make some decisions, I wanted to keep as much green as I can, the environment, and I want to preserve for my children, for my grandchildren, for their grandchildren, and you know that's the way to keep the environment active, to keep it growing, to keep it vital. That's what I want for my children, for my grandchildren, and this is a way that I can do for our town, and still survive and have a nice looking town, because these. The panels, after a while, they grow on you, and the way we have them in one of our sittings, the terrain flows, and so the panels are put in with the terrain, and it's a real nice setting.
Jesse, I want to come back to what Isaiah said about how there have been there's been some argument, I guess, in his circles as to whether or not this is the solution or not. And there have been some political consequences for some prominent politicians. I'm thinking of the South Carolina Republican, Bob Inglis, who lost his seat for taking a stand on climate action. What was his stance? What was that about?
Well, interestingly, Congressman Bob Inglis was the keynote speaker of our annual public policy conference, Greening the State House, just this last year. So I had a chance to spend some time with him. And he was a climate skeptic. And then he took a couple of trips that were really life-changing, one to Antarctica and then one to the Great Barrier Reef. And he began to realize that the science is real. And so then he took the step of saying, well, if this is what the science is, and my faith is also telling me that I have a duty to serve God through protecting creation, then that led him to actually advance a carbon tax. And it's true that he lost his seat. But it's important to understand the context too, which is that he was proposing that public policy solution during the most serious economic downturn in U.S. history since the Great Depression. And I think what he has learned is just, again, as he's become essentially an evangelist for climate solutions across the country, particularly to conservatives, that the type of climate solutions that we're talking about, whether in terms of decarbonizing the power sector, the transportation sector, or getting communities to better adapt through protecting wetlands and forests, that is something that is going to benefit conservative and red counties just as much as it's going to affect liberal and blue counties.
I want to thank each and every one of you for your time today. Jesse Carbonda is the executive director of the Hoosier Environmental Council. Thanks to you, Jesse.
Thank you, Matt.
Isaiah Mears is chairman of the Indiana Federation of College Republicans and co-founder of Young Conservatives for Carbon Dividends. Thanks to you, Isaiah.
Thank you for having me, sir.
And Mike Oakes is the mayor of Solar City, North Vernon, Indiana. Thanks, Mayor Oakes.
Thank you for having me.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross. If you would like a podcast of this show or any past show, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts. Tomorrow, we will talk about innovation schools and find out why leaders from Indianapolis Public Schools want to remove the leaders and most staff from two failing schools and replace them with independent operators. In the meantime, we are on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. You can find us there. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.